We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
The Gap Factory Labor Day sale is happening now. Hurry in for the best deals of the season. 40 to 75% off everything. Plus doorbusters August 30th through September 2nd only. Tees from $4.99. Logo styles from $16.99. And jeans from $19.99. Shop in-store today at Gap Factory or at GapFactory.com.
Welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Command Center podcast, home of the biggest edge in Dynasty fantasy football. My name is Curtis Patrick, and I'm joined by Travis May, and we are the Dynasty and Devy coordinators at RotoViz. We've been talking rookies for months now, but we're going to move on a little bit with this episode to the Devy class of 2020, the Devy class of 2021. Who are the next rookie classes that we need to get excited about? How do they compare to the rookies that we're drafting right now? This is what that episode's about. Many of you might have Devy drafts that occur right after your rookie draft, or even maybe concurrently. You got an auction. What does the top tier look like? Those are all topics we're going to hit tonight. Before we talk about any of the actual players, though, Travis, why don't you give the listeners an idea of what a Devy league is? What is the format? If somebody's never heard of it, you know, what would be a way to get into this thing?
Yeah, so short answer is, I mean, if you have been playing fantasy football for a while and you just want to kind of lock up your favorite college football players so you make sure that they're on your squads when they enter the NFL, you can do that in Devy leagues. You don't necessarily always get points for your roster. I mean, some of my weird formats, we integrate some college fantasy points into what we do, but realistically, a Devy draft, you just get to draft your favorite USC wide receiver, your favorite running back from Alabama or wherever you tend to root for, or you just tend to believe it, they're going to project well to the pros. And so it's a lot of fun because you can own a player from, you know, their age 18 season and just watch them explode and then land on your roster and actually contribute. And it can take some time to actually see the production, but when you really finally get a solid contributing player off of a Devy pick from 2-3 years ago, it's just incredibly gratifying. So it's a lot of fun just rooting for these guys throughout the process.
Yeah, man, that's a great introduction. And even beyond just picking the players and adding that whole other level of scouting and level of competition and high school star ratings and all that, yeah. It really is its own subculture. But what also is cool about a Devy league is when you play Devy Dynasty, you just have that many more assets that become tradable. And you have all these different ways of building a squad. A rebuild looks a little different in a Devy league. And you know how every league that you play in, you've got the guy that really loves to chase the youth. And it's almost like maybe he's a football card collector more than actually trying to win a title. Well, you've got that like to the nth degree and Devy leagues. It is really fun, and people really love to just, you know, stamp their name on a prospect when they hit, and you almost never hear the end of it. So that is what this episode's about. Really, before we get into Travis's new API metrics and how they can help us spot some of these new Devy All-Stars, I want to share with you a word from our sponsor tonight, the FFPC. It's been 10 years since our friends at the FFPC filled their first Dynasty League, and they've now grown to be the world's largest Dynasty League commissioner, with leagues as high as $5,000 to enter. Leagues are active and competitive, and not a single league has ever folded. That's a big problem in the Dynasty community. FFPC is on your side with that. That great roster that you build, all the dollars and hours and sweat equity that you got in your roster, it's never going to be wasted because they get all those orphans taken over. Brand new startup Dynasty Leagues are forming right now. They start at $77, but they've got levels at $250, $500, $750, $1,250, $2,500, and $5,000. You can play in a traditional PPR league. They've got super flex and best ball formats as well. They also have great redraft formats, including best ball. They're filling daily with the live drafts. They've also got slow email style drafts. Go to myffpc.com. That's myffpc.com, the home of season-long high-stakes fantasy football. And just a reminder, all new subscribers to our Dynasty Command Center Slack get a $35 league credit applicable to any Dynasty League fee startup at $77 or higher. We had over 40 people take us up on that last week, so we hope that you'll also give that a try this week after this episode. So now we're going to get into the incredible 2020 running back class and how that compares to this year. You know, we've known for years, thanks to the recruiting class scores, and for anyone that plays Devy, this is supposed to be like that magic class. Even kind of, I think more so than the 2017 class that ended up being kind of like a nice surprise and a little deeper than maybe we thought it would be. 2020, this is like the creme de la creme, man. We also want to talk about some of the top receivers and the combine for some basic top end rankings. Mention wide receiver production. So Travis, let's start with the running backs. What do we need to know about this class, and what can your metrics maybe tell us about these guys?
Yeah, so with the running backs, it's funny, with you mentioned the 2017 class. We kind of knew that the very top end of the 2017 class was going to be special for a long time. If you pay attention to college football and or in Devy leagues, really recruiting, the big picture there, wide receivers and their star ratings and the top end wide receivers don't project as well or successfully in terms of finding true college or NFL success like they do the running backs. It's probably just a little bit easier of a position to, you know, it's not so reliant on scheme, and it's not really, frankly, as complex a position. So the 2017 running backs, like, you know, Leonard Fournette and Dalvin Cook, I mean, those guys were like God's gift to the running back position 3 years before they ever stepped foot on an NFL field. And so, you know, they were obviously going to be hyped up long, long before that. And even like Joe Mixon, he was highly recruited. Like, so really stacked class for a long time. But this year, well, the 2020 class, rather, that's probably got the same level of talent at the top, plus it's deeper. So I'm really excited to see what that actually looks like once they make it to the NFL. And a lot of these guys, they've already produced in a big way, and you want to see adequate production, you know, large sample size of success with these guys. You want to see them win in kind of pro style setups if we can get looks at that. But I mean, you got names like Cam Akers, who in high school was almost more like a wildcat quarterback than he was a running back. And then you've got Najee Harris at Alabama, who should take the majority of the work this year, with maybe true freshman Trey Sanders as well helping him out a bit. And then those guys were actually top five prospects, in not just at the position, in the country when they came into college. And it's really, really checked out thus far. And then you've got DeAndre Swift, Georgia. And he's, I mean, we're going to get to kind of talking about our rankings a little bit. But by many, he's maybe the best running back in the 2020 class, and he was a top 33. I think he was 33, 34 around that range in his class as well. But we're looking at a class that had 24 running backs all inside the top 300. Several of the names that were at the top of that running back class are the names that we still think are going to translate. And this could be one of the stickiest recruiting class rating to NFL success ratings I've ever seen, if it pans out like I think, with draft capital next year, because I think we're going to see Najee Harris, Cam Akers, DeAndre Swift, J.K. Dobbins, even Eno Benjamin, probably all those guys, maybe plus some up at the top, are going to be day one, day two picks. So it's really just been interesting as I've dove into the success rate of the recruiting versus success in college, and then eventually the NFL. They've done a pretty good job at that position. But I think we're a little bit more reliant on production numbers when looking at wide receiver analysis, which is why I kind of wanted to build a better way to just visualize big picture production for wide receivers. But I'm interested just to get to the rankings discussion, though, because there's so many running backs crowded at the top of this class. But right now, I feel like, and Curtis, if you're on the same page, I feel like it's Travis Etienne for Clemson and DeAndre Swift for Georgia. Those two guys seem kind of like in a league of their own from a ranking standpoint, not only at RotoViz, but at other sites as well.
Yeah, they're kind of interchangeable at this point. I think Mew and Jordan Hoover are the three rankers at RotoViz, and the three of us have, you know, those guys as one or two.
Yeah.
And they really have separated themselves as the top tier. But, you know, we still got a whole nother season to play. And injuries can occur. Somebody else could emerge. Some of the names that you went through, and when you think about how many of them I could actually see like being treated as the running back one in next year's class, that's when it gets a little crazy to me, because we have Etienne, we have Swift, and then like down the list, you have Akers, you have Jonathan Taylor, you have, you know, Benjamin, AJ Dillon, J.K. Dobbins. I mean, there's a lot of guys here.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of guys here that, depending on landing spot and draft capital, you talk about being like a top 100 pick. I mean, it's going to be a little bit crazy. And so because of the quality of the depth, I'm a little bit less hung up on what's the particular order,
yeah,
you know, that somebody wants to list these names in. And it's more about just trying to collect a couple different guys kind of in that seven, group of seven that I just mentioned. I wouldn't, you know, sell the farm probably to roster Etienne or Swift if I thought I could get two of the other guys with the same sort of capital investment. What do you think about that?
I think you're right on. I think while they're, you know, you might have your guy in any class, and maybe their value right now, DeAndre Swift and Travis Etienne, their value right now might be greater than somebody down the list at a J.K. Dobbins or an Eno Benjamin for Arizona State. Or even like an A.J. Dillon for Boston College. I don't really care. I just want, with hit rates and Devy prospects, I just want more darts. Because, I mean, I may be super confident right now that these players are going to hit, but a lot can happen, like you said, in this final season. And so if I've got two chances to hit on similarly talented players, I'm definitely going to go for the more darts when I can, because Devy and just college football in general, projecting NFL success is so, so difficult to do, especially when we're talking a year, 2 years out. I mean, the NFL, they're bad at getting it when they have all the information at their fingertips, let alone missing an entire year of production and success and staying healthy and, you know, maybe just growing in your game. So it's a little bit, maybe, like I said, easier to see the talent at the running back position, just because there's not like 47 different versions of what the wide receiver position can look like. There is with the wide receivers, but not with running backs. I mean, it's, you know, there's pass catching backs, there's, you know, your bruisers, there's, you know, your feature balance guys, and that's, you know, that's about it. And so gauging the talent is a little bit easier there. But I don't really know if I'm really going to be reaching for any of these guys or overpaying for any of these guys. I'm actually in an auction draft right now where I'm actually forcing all the Debbie guys out there for 2020 because it's already been so hyped up within our nerdy little circles that people are wanting to own as many 2020 running backs as they possibly can and overpay if they have to do it. And I'm just not really there with Debbie assets. And we were kind of talking about that before the show, but I mean, when you can trade in production, sometimes it's, you know, it's not even the best play to necessarily own a bunch of Debbies. It's like you want to have all the Debbies or you want to have none. That's kind of where I typically find myself in leagues. I don't know about you.
Yeah, I think in the Debbie leagues that I play, it's usually maybe a maximum of three guys owning like 80% of the Debbie assets in a given year. Because we talked about this a little bit in the lead in. It's like a whole new way to strategize your build. One thing I wanted to mention before we actually try to cut these top seven or eight backs into a couple different tiers is, I wouldn't call it a worry, but it's something that I think about. You know, there's a lot of quality of depth and talent coming in at that position next year. But we've had a massive influx of talent within the last couple of years in the NFL at the running back position, and we're seeing backs used differently. Even though there's a handful of guys that profile like three down backs, I think a lot of the jobs have been taken. And so I think that there's so many quality guys. You know, some of these guys are not going to land in great positions, and they're going to become committee backs for their first contract or for at least part of their first contract. And that's a concern. You know, the 2017 class really did a number on that. And I think even this year, with this class, I don't know that with the perceived weakness that there was within our community and even in the NFL, like draft scout community, I think more backs went earlier in the draft than I probably would have predicted. There were some real surprises that were drafted even by the end of day two.
Yeah.
And, you know, teams doing back-to-back years of running backs by the end of day two, that's pretty rare in this day and age. So it's just something to have in the back of your mind. You know, I think that's probably more of like a contrarian view. To actually go and full fade the 2020 running back class might not be something that I would recommend. But I think at some point the value you can get for these chips before they enter the league might become enticing enough to trade it for the production now. And so just kind of keep that in mind. Let's try to cut these guys up into maybe like a top three tier for running backs and then just maybe like a little bit of sleeper watch. So yeah. I'm going to let RV score guide us through this and we'll kind of do it organically. RV yeah. score is just basically a way of measuring kind of the distribution or agreement of our rankings on the site. And as we already said, Etienne and Swift are a clear tier one. I don't know that based off of that score, we could make an argument for anyone else to be in that tier. I mean, would you make that argument?
I think some people that really are just holding out hope that Florida State's offense has just ruined Cam Akers, I think they would probably, his production anyway, I think they might lump him in with that group. But I think there's probably just a slight gap for me, and just because I am a little bit worried about his limitations in production and his really big play ability that he really hasn't put on display at all in college. So I think there's just maybe one question or two questions more I have on Akers than I do with either Etienne or Swift.
Okay. So we'll agree that the clear tier one then is Etienne and Swift. Yeah. And maybe Akers is, you know, just a half a notch below, but he's not quite on that level.
Right.
We've got Akers and Jonathan Taylor would be the first two names in tier two. And then where are you at on Eno Benjamin? Is he in that, belong in that group or deserving to be with those other two guys for you right now?
To me, he is. I think the only concern that some people might have with him is his size, because he's not going to weigh in at 220 pounds at all. I think he's going to be somebody who really tests out well agility wise, and his burst score is probably going to be solid. But he really just blew it up this past year at Arizona State and was just a I mean, even at a smaller size, he was still, you know, 30 carries a game or something at times. So I'm not really worried about his ability to carry a significant workload. I think some people will be scared, but I think that's, I don't worry about that with him just because of his play style and how he moves. I think he has to be in that second tier for me. And I think a lot of people are kind of pushing him slowly up the ranking board right now as they're watching more of Benjamin and what he can do.
Yeah, I think he belongs there as well. He's in my top 12 overall, and I think you've got him in your top 10, actually. So I've no problem with that. We got to figure out if the line gets drawn after Benjamin or if there's another name that needs to be up there. We've got J.K. Dobbins, A.J. Dillon would be the next two names probably deserving of consideration there.
Yeah.
Do you see a tier break after Benjamin before those guys?
I think so. I think there's just a few people that have some questions about A.J. Dillon's receiving game and receiving ability and just kind of being pigeonholed as a two-down guy in the NFL. Definitely no more. And I get that. Like, he basically didn't catch anything prior to this year, and he still really hasn't done much in that regard. He just wasn't really asked to do that much. I mean, he's only caught 8 passes in 2 seasons. That's not, you don't really want to see that, but somebody who can just take over a game easily, and talk about true future size. He's probably 6'2", well, probably 240 really. So he's got,
he is.
It's just absolutely bonkers how huge he is. And J.K. Dobbins, he disappeared at times, this past season and, struggled to, you know, beat out Mike Weber for touches at times as well. And Mike Weber is a guy that, you know, just barely got drafted this year. So it's a little bit confusing to see his inconsistency. I think he blew up because his very first game for Ohio State, his very first career game, I think he set the record for a true freshman in yards for Ohio State, which was huge. But ever since then, he's just kind of been on a roller coaster. And I dropped him way down in my rankings midseason this past year. But I think he has to be in that tier below Eno just because of, again, the questions. I would put one more up in that conversation just because I think consensus would put in there. And I'd say a guy like Kylin Hill is probably sneaks up with or near A.J. Dillon and J.K. Dobbins next year too.
Yeah, I think that's the next, that's like the tier three, right? So we would have tier one as Etienne and Swift.
Yeah.
Tier two is Akers, Taylor, Benjamin.
Yeah.
And then tier three is Dillon, Dobbins, and Kylin Hill.
Yeah, that's how I would paint it right now.
Yeah, I feel pretty good about that. That's a pretty solid top eight at the running back position and should definitely give some people some ideas of where they can go in Devy drafts this season, or if they, you know, if those guys are already owned in your Devy leagues, depending on, you know, I think one function of Devy leagues is, you know, how early can those players be drafted? I've seen leagues where, you know, you can't draft, you know, a player when they're a freshman. There's different settings there. So if it's possible, some of these guys, or maybe it's a Devy league where like only, you know, one player can be drafted per team and it's not a deep Devy league. Mm-hmm. So some of those guys might be available when you are on the clock this spring. Before we get into the wide receiver position and talk about adjusted production index, I want to talk to you a little bit about Yahoo DFS. The Yahoo Daily Fantasy Sports platform is unlike what you'll see from the other big box brands. Their GPP contests have max entry limits of 10 per player, and their quick match feature pairs up users with similar experience and win-loss records to ensure you're going head-to-head with people of the same skill level. No sharks gobbling up your head-to-heads if you don't want them to. The lobby is always full of Major League Baseball, NBA, NHL, and my personal favorite this time of year, PGA contest. We got the PGA Championship going on right now. I've been watching my lineups all day, watching that creep. You can try your hand at Yahoo DFS with $25 free on us just by using our promo code VIZ25 with your first deposit. Go to yahoo.com/dailyfantasy today and start your journey. You could be the next big winner. All right, Travis. Well, let's get about a 2-minute summary of adjusted production index, and then let's talk about what it can teach us about the 2020 and 2021 wide receiver classes.
Sure. So if you've checked out, or maybe you haven't checked out my piece, you'll get a little bit better look at, a more complete look at the breakdown here of what the adjusted production index looks like if you go over to RotoViz and just check out the adjusted production index piece. But I wanted to just capture visually what a good score looks like for production overall for a wide receiver. Obviously, we know breakout age is important. Obviously, we know draft capital is important. But I wanted to look at adjusted dominator rating, which is basically just your the percentage of your offense that you account for with your yards and your touchdowns and the peak numbers, basically your best season's numbers at dominator rating. And then your yards per team pass attempt, which has shown to be one of the stickiest variables in terms of translating to NFL success. And then touchdowns per team pass attempt as well, just to kind of speak to finding those red zone monsters that just get in the end zone every single chance that they get. And kind of take a full look at those three variables, weight them and adjust them for what you know, what's called a Z-score. Essentially, they're standard deviations away from an average wide receiver in the sample in college, and can kind of compare them to each other. And I took a look at players that entered the NFL in between 2005 and 2016. And I basically looked at their production scores and guys that were immensely productive, guys that were not productive at all, spanning from Demaryius Thomas's ridiculous numbers because he was Georgia Tech and it was kind of a smaller sample and he had an unbelievable adjusted production index score, all the way down to, you know, there's a couple of examples of guys that have found success in the NFL, or at least limited success, like Adam Humphries was way near the bottom, but he's like the only guy in the, like basically the entire bottom 20% of adjusted production index scores that did basically anything in the pros. And I found some pretty interesting stuff about the hit rates. Basically, if you were in the top 10%, you were almost a lock in terms of your production score to hitting in the NFL. And if you're in the top 40% or so, is about the cutoff where I'm really super interested in your hit rate and the likelihood of you making it in the NFL, especially if you add draft capital into it and you get like top 100 pick, you know, basically day one, day two type draft capital assigned to you. So I looked at all those things and I wanted to look at this rookie class and compare them to, you know, the guys from 2005 to 2016 that entered the league and have at least three seasons under their belt. But now here we are, and I've actually dug into some of the Devy prospects, current college players that have already produced pretty well, or not what we want to see just yet, but may do so. Some pretty popular names among Devy League circles. And there's some pretty intriguing names, some guys that could basically miss their entire final season this year and already have a good enough production profile to be super intriguing and really to make me believe that they have a good chance of succeeding in the NFL, especially, like I said, if they get that draft capital assigned to them as well. And one of everybody's favorites for the wide receiver position that pays attention to college football and Devy, Tyler Johnson for Minnesota. I mean, he's just a name that not a lot of people know if you don't nerd out about college football or if you don't play Devy leagues. But Tyler Johnson, if he didn't play a down this year, would already have a 98th percentile score in terms of adjusted production index. Basically, his overall production score is just off the charts. And so I really hope he does get some draft capital, because if he does, I think he's going to be one of those guys that has to go early next year. And in a, you know, a class full of running backs, he could be one of the few wide receivers that sneaks in up top. But besides him, and there's about five other guys that really stuck out with their production profile. You know, a name like Jerry Jeudy. He already has the adequate production index score to make me believe he's, you know, if you attach some draft capital to Jerry Jeudy, you know, he's a first round pick. He's basically a lock for NFL production. And so there's really seldom a guy like that, or really any wide receiver that I feel like are locks, but he's kind of close just looking at the production index and his implied draft capital next year. I mean, he already won the Biletnikoff Award this year for being college football's best wide receiver. So there's several other names, but I'm curious. I don't know if you had Jeudy as your wide receiver one, but if you didn't, who else is in the conversation up there in that top tier?
Yeah, Jeudy is currently my wide receiver two. and I have Laviska Shenault above him. But it, you know, it's almost kind of the same conversation as Etienne and Swift. You know, I mean, it's the two or three guys that I like. I've also got Rondale Moore, Justin Ross are also kind of in that picture. But you're gonna have to wait an additional season for those guys, so they're, you know, just slightly behind right now. But I can see in your API spreadsheet that you shared with me here that, you know, even those 2021 guys, I mean, they're ready to go. They're locked and loaded. So I'm not necessarily picky at this point. I'm not going to pretend to be a soothsayer that knows if Laviska Shenault or Jerry Jeudy is going to be the better pro. But I know that I like them both a lot. And I like that you're it's almost one of those confirmation bias things. When I see them show up well in your metric, makes me feel pretty good about how I had them diced up in my rankings. So
yeah,
where do you have Laviska? Because it can be difficult sometimes on the players that aren't from an Alabama and questioning you know how they would project. Does API tell you anything about quality of competition? Are there any things that maybe you would want people to know about API that could help sort through some of that mess?
Yeah, so as far as like the level of competition, I do try to split them up into two kind of rankings when I am looking at these guys to just say, okay, well, yeah, Jaden Reed had a great season for Western Michigan with his production score, but I'm not super, you know, I'm not as intrigued about his impressive freshman season as I am like a Rondale Moore, who had an even better season against better competition. So I do take that into account, and I do kind of look at those two players that kind of in two different ranking sets until I see some draft capital attached to them in the pros. But as far as debut purposes go, I do prefer going after guys, especially at the wide receiver position, that are Power Five schools. So they just have a historically, you see less small school guys make it. You know, some of the best players ever are small school guys, but that's not historically. I'm not going for outliers necessarily when I'm playing Devy. I'm going for guys that I feel like are safer hit rate guys, but also have the upside and also check a lot of the boxes that I want to see, because it's a hit rate game. That's what it is. I mean, if you want to say that you're going to get the next Jerry Rice coming from nowhere state, and that's fine. But that's not how I approach my Debbie drafts for the most part. And really looking at...
You just offended everyone in the Mississippi Valley, sir.
Yeah, that's fine.
You just offended them all.
That's okay.
That's one of our biggest listening regions.
Well...
Come on, man.
Sorry, man. I'm from Tennessee. You know, I live in Tennessee now. From Indiana. No Mississippi bias. I don't hate you guys. So if you're listening, you're okay. But seriously though, with the API, you just really want to see through one or two years of production. You can't always expect these guys to check all the boxes right away. Oftentimes you'll see a ton of prospects in their final season, actually it'd be their best season. No surprise. But you know, if they're not at the threshold of adjusted production index right now that they need to be, I wouldn't be worried about it too badly. Like CeeDee Lamb, he had to compete with Marquise Hollywood Brown this year for market share, but this year he's probably going to blow up and check a little bit more of a box there. He had about an average, like if he was entering this year's NFL draft, he would have a very average total adjusted production index, but he's somebody who could explode with his final season production and get the draft capital and enter a tier of expectations where he's also in the wide receiver one conversation with Laviska, with Jerry Jeudy. Right now I have it for 2020, it's Jeudy, Laviska, and then CeeDee Lamb. But those three, I think, for varying reasons, I think you can make an argument for any of those three as a potential wide receiver one in the 2020 class. But Rondale Moore is just a freaking unicorn. Like, I'm a little biased because, I mean, I went to Purdue, and he's basically the second best, maybe, Boilermaker ever already through his freshman year. Just what he did, having over 2,000 all-purpose yards, winning the Paul Hornung Award for being the most versatile player in college football. And by the way, the last five winners of that award went on to be first-round NFL draft picks. That's guys like Odell Beckham Jr. That's guys like Christian McCaffrey. The guys that are just absolute stud athletes, stud production, guys that hit. And yes, Rondell Moore's smaller, but he's right there next to the guys that are eligible for 2020. I have him sixth overall in all of my Devy rankings everywhere. And it's crazy to say that considering I got him in the 42nd round of a super embarrassingly nerdy Devy draft / college fantasy football draft last year. So to get a guy in the 42nd round and then have him be a top 10 type value player like that is just, it's so much fun.
42nd round, man. You should have not told me about that. I'm going to figure out a way to come back and turn the tables on you with that one. But yeah, man, Moore, really, really insane. Six games with double-digit receptions last season?
Yeah, just nuts.
Seven games over 100 yards. I mean, and he's small, but what did we see? And I think this is something that's going to translate to Devy rankings. It's already starting to show up for me a little bit. I think that we used to penalize smaller receivers. And, I mean, this year, the NFL, the way that GMs and scouts spoke about how they evaluate wide receivers, separation is the trump card.
Oh, yeah.
It is not size and the jump ball anymore. It is separation. And he's not Marquise Brown small. I mean, he entered school at 175 pounds. You know, I would expect him to enter the draft over 180. So, I mean, he's still going to be small. I mean, he's not going to be Dez Bryant size, you know, when he enters the league. But, I think these smaller guys, they no longer deserve that penalty. We used to view those guys as maybe more situation dependent. You know, well, they're not a prototypical X. Well, the prototypical X is, I mean, for all intents and purposes, might be dead in the NFL with the way that the offenses are going and the way the college game is infiltrating the league. So beyond those top guys that we mentioned, that top four, who else should we have an eye on at the wide receiver position?
Well, I think Justin Ross, also 2021, a lot of people really wanted to get excited about T. Higgins. But then Ross came in and had just as an impressive year as Higgins, and Higgins has already been there for a year. Really, Justin Ross, his production, adjusted production index is not, like, if he was entering the NFL draft right now, he would only be around the 30th percentile production profiles. But he already did have a breakout season, accounting for about 25% of the offense and having a nice yards per team pass attempt numbers. And really, he's looking like he's on the DeAndre Hopkins type production profile in college. Whereas, you know, most of the time at Clemson, these guys don't have crazy bonkers, you know, dominator ratings. They don't take up a huge percentage of the offense because there's just so many other good wide receivers. I think Higgins is going to go next year, and Ross is probably still going to outproduce Higgins this year. But in Ross's final season, I think we're going to see something truly unbelievable, and he might pass and for most people heading into the 2021 draft as being the no-brainer wide receiver one, just because of, you know, people are chasing that size and athleticism. And if he does check the production score in a way that I think he can this year, and especially in his final season, his third season in college, I think we're looking at a player that could be better than all these guys we're talking about potentially. So I think a lot of people are swinging for the fences with him. He's kind of in almost like a tier of his own, if you really just kind of were objective about his production profile and where he's probably going to be projected NFL draft wise and things. But I think a lot of people have him right there in that conversation with those other guys for sure. But beyond that, I think Tylan Wallace was really impressive for Oklahoma State. I don't have him as high as some people do, but his production just already, if he didn't play another down, he would already be above average, basically around 64th, 65th percentile in his adjusted production index. And so if you get a guy like him and then give him day two draft capital, you're talking about a similar hit rate as a guy like in this class, like AJ Brown, like somebody who could be a mid to late first round pick if he didn't play another down of college already. So that's that's solid. And if he goes next year, he's going to be fighting a lot of running backs, and so he might get pushed back a little bit in terms of his rookie draft stock. But I think a lot of people are pretty high on him. Henry Ruggs is the other guy at Alabama, but he might be just as fast or faster than Jerry Jeudy. So I think he doesn't have the production profile that Jeudy has, but he's caught an insane amount of touchdowns. So if he fixes his adjusted numbers this year, it maybe eats a little bit larger percentage of the pie. He'll check a couple of other boxes there. But those guys are kind of like a step down below what we were kind of talking about with the real elite, kind of elite five. And maybe some people try to throw in like a Bryan Edwards or somebody else in that conversation. But really for me, it's elite five. And then you've got like T. Higgins, Tyler Johnson, Bryan Edwards, kind of a step down after that.
Well, speaking of Tyler Johnson and Bryan Edwards, I want to get to a couple of listener questions that came into us as people are trying to make sense of the class next year and beyond. I'm just going to read down the wide receiver rookie positional rankings at RotoViz, and I want you to stop me where you would insert Tyler Johnson.
Okay, like this year, yeah.
Yeah, this year. Where would Tyler Johnson and Bryan Edwards have slotted in if they had declared this year?
Okay.
N'Keal Harry.
Stop.
Andy Isabella.
No, like stop.
Yeah, stop?
Yeah.
Stop. Okay. Right there. Tyler Johnson, and wide receiver two.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, now let's find a spot for Edwards. And these may or may not reflect your rankings, but we're going to go with the site rankings here. Andy Isabella.
I think he's right
AJ
there.
AJ Brown.
Like, right, no, you don't have to go okay. further. I think okay. right there. Wow. Like those two guys, I think, are up there for me. Even like Jalen Reagor for TCU's, he would have been pretty strong in this class as well. I think especially now that we've seen the landing spots, it's a little bit easier to, in hindsight to just see looking at the landing spots and say, ugh, I don't like the situation there. But even pre-draft, I think they would have been right there in that tier along with the guys that we thought were going to be going high, like AJ Brown, like even DK Metcalf in that same conversation. Tyler Johnson, because of his ridiculous production profile overall, and Bryan Edwards, because he had the really insane early breakout age, and he hasn't really had that top out, just go bonkers season yet, but he was competing with Debo Samuel this past year, who just went 36th overall in the NFL draft. This season, though, is crucial for Edwards to get that draft capital and prove that he's an alpha, and I think he's going to this year in a spot where he does no longer have to compete against a guy like Debo, and he can really run the show in his final season, get like a 35% dominator or so, and really fix that, and then add the draft capital as well, and then he's going to sit in a really safe-looking spot as a prospect. But I know I had some questions just after this year, not really looking like he improved necessarily, but I think those two would have to be right there. And so
I thought there's a little bit of creep for Edwards this year, you know, even though, you know, we would have liked to see the nice round numbers. It would have been nice to have, you know, 4-digit receiving yards, but
yeah,
you know, he did post his best season in terms of receiving yards, best season in touchdowns, best season in average yards per reception. So I think there's still been, and actually it was an improvement by over 3 yards a reception over his sophomore campaign. So, grinding it up in chunks, I mean, 15 yards a reception, pretty impressive with 7 touchdowns. So I agree. I mean, getting somebody that's so versatile like Debo out of the way, it would be a blessing, I think, for Edwards. And with the way this wide receiver class seemed to really convince NFL front offices that they were deserving of that early draft capital. We didn't like that Tyler Johnson decided to stay in school. We didn't like that Bryan Edwards stayed in school. But I don't think it hurts them to build their profiles a little bit more.
Yeah.
I think, you know, a guy like, you know, fan favorite Hakeem Butler slide into the fourth round when it seemed that, you know, everything that he put on tape in his most recent season and the measurables being there and the right story being there to excuse away for some why he didn't produce early, a talent like that sliding to the fourth round who looks like maybe on film a more dynamic player than Bryan Edwards, well, you have to question how early he would have really gone in this draft. So, you know, we got to wait another year on those guys. They got to, you know, rot on our taxi squad for another year. But we're going to get to see him soon enough. Let's get to a couple other listener questions. Let's see here. Oh, we got Tamori and Terry.
Yeah.
A question came in. Big 6'4" target at Florida State. Just came off his redshirt freshman season. 35 receptions, 744 yards, and 8 touchdowns. What's to like about Terry? Is he on your radar right now?
He is, but he's definitely a ways down the list for me. And it's kind of hard to get a read on any Florida State offensive player just because they've been kind of a trash heap just collectively. When one aspect looks great, everything else looks awful, and it just goes in a cycle. But Terry, I mean, he's got a ridiculous yards per reception, 21.3 for a reason. He basically just runs goes for days. And even when he's not even involved in the play, he's still clearing out a side. So he's, you know, he's not the most balanced player right now. And he's actually not as thick as, you know, your typical X either, I don't believe, just yet. He might be marked up a little bit on his weight, I think. So it's going to be kind of a weird read. If he chooses to come out next year, I think that would be a little weird if he did. So he might be, if you're drafting him now, I would expect him to not really come out for a while still. So it's kind of hard to gauge for me. But he's somebody that I'm intrigued by his size. I'm intrigued by his speed. But lately we've been seeing guys like that drop to round three, round four, even, you know, the specialist types. So I'm not sure he's a balanced wide receiver one for an NFL team ever, but still intriguing just because of the combination of size, speed, and deep threat that people want to see.
Yeah, I mean, he's pretty much a watch list guy if it's a longer list. I'm looking at our current rankings right now. Neither you nor I nor Jordan Hoover have him inside our top 48. So, just maybe a guy that's out there on the periphery. We're interested in what he's going to do in 2019, but beyond that, kind of in wait and see mode.
Yeah, I'd say that's definitely safe with Terry.
All right. So speaking of freshman production, I want to talk about a guy who had some injury trouble this year and was really a darling in the Devy community following 2017. Jamon Osbon, Texas A&M. What's the story with what happened in 2018? And I mean, how are you treating him now?
Yeah, you know, the buzz all, you know, last spring even, you know, hey, oh, Osmond's just ready to lead this wide receiver room. He's clearly the best guy on the team, just goes out there and dominates physically and wins underneath and does all these really cool things. He looks like he has decent ball skills. Every rider that was covering the team after his impressive kind of breakout year in 2017 for Texas A&M with 50 catches in his first season in college is solid, but he really struggled with health for a good portion of this past season. And when he did, you know, you saw other guys take over. You saw the tight end, Jay Sternberger, basically be operated as the team's wide receiver one. You saw a guy like Courtney Davis, Cameron Buckley, even Kendrick Rogers I guess it was the LSU game, kind of exploded. So there's a bunch of other good wide receivers now competing for those catches. And Osmond didn't even catch a touchdown this year. So it's just really strange read this year. Obviously, he's already still considered their kind of wide receiver one, with Cameron Buckley being the other every down type wide receiver there for Texas A&M this year. But this year is the most crucial of his entire career by far. If he stays healthy and doesn't put up reasonable numbers and doesn't look like even, you know, the best wide receiver on his own team, he might just be completely undrafted free agent type guy, which is kind of crazy considering all the hype that was surrounding him after his freshman season. But I think the problem is he's not very fast, and he's not the most elusive. He doesn't create the separation that we want to see in the modern NFL. So yeah, he can win physically. Yeah, he can win underneath, and you know, but I mean, if you look at his yards per reception, it's around 12, and that's because he just doesn't really create. So we might be looking at a guy with Laquon Treadwell's profile, maybe, if he has a perfect 2019 season. So it kind of stinks to say that, because I actually have a share of Osmond on a roster, but that's probably where we are.
Well, Osmond, kind of the same story as Terry, for the listener that wanted to know about him. Not inside our top 48 for no. any of the three of us at this time. So kind of relegated to the watch list, although, unfortunately, I think he was widely owned across most Devy leagues. So kind of just a guy that you're going to have to hold on and hope for at this point. Is there any, I'm just going to give you a freebie here, a Hail Mary at the end of the episode, Travis. Sure. Is there any guy that you just find yourself wanting to push up those rankings, even though, I mean, nothing's happened since really December in college football. who's that riser that you're getting excited about?
I don't know what they're putting in the water at Penn State, but Saquon Barkley.
Oh no,
Miles Sanders, 2 years in a row. I mean, they've got, well, the obvious running back one in Barkley, and debatably the running back one in this class with Miles Sanders. And then I think this year they're going to have another guy that I really liked coming out of, really even coming into college, Ricky Slade for Penn State. He's a little bit undersized, just kind of like Eno is a little bit undersized, but he's got legit, I mean, he's going to be a guy who could press for sub 4.4 as a running back, and really solid, even though he didn't demonstrate it last year, really solid receiving chops, can really haul it in with one hand whenever he really needs to. I really hope he gets an opportunity to be a receiver out of the backfield for Penn State this year. I keep on finding myself moving Ricky Slade up further and further on my board. He's actually a top 30 overall player for me right now. I think he's going to explode. They have some other good running backs there, but I think his talent is just too great to leave off the field, and he's going to be a just crazy riser who could be just like Eno was, slightly undersized, but I don't care. He's just a ridiculous talent that's probably going to be in the top 10 of Devy drafts next year.
Yeah, man. And that's just such a cool name too, man. Like, I feel like it's like it's a name of like a street fighter or something. Yeah. In that old game. Ricky Slade, man. Yeah, I don't mind that. I think it's just so natural to want to be looking for that next running back. I mean, the running backs get owned so early, like you said earlier in the episode, because we know so much about their profiles coming out of high school that really have to get those guys, you know, as freshmen. I mean, Slade's already owned in plenty of Devy leagues, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Another cool running back name for me. What do you think about Chuba Hubbard? You like Chuba Hubbard?
Yeah, Chuba Hubbard for Oklahoma State. I mean, he's somebody that could creep up the list as well. His opportunity is undeniable. Yeah. What we saw just Justice Hill do was just crazy. So Hubbard's got the size too. So I think he looks more like a feature than Justice Hill. So if he hasn't just bonkers 2019, you could be looking at a guy who could actually have greater draft capital than Hill did this year and sneak into the maybe back end of round three, even though that's going to be kind of a crowded area, I think, at the position next year. But yeah, the cool name, feature back size, great opportunity, great value, really, because he's, you know, going running back, I don't know, not even in the top 10 maybe in a lot of my Devy leagues, probably this year going to be even a top 10 back. So once you get down that far, I mean, it's anybody's value, so I like him a lot.
Yeah, and 22 receptions in his first season of action. I mean, it was a redshirt freshman season, not a true freshman season, but that's always impressive. I like to see the backs that find their way onto the field with some of those valuable touch opportunities young. I think it can often be a positive indicator of things to come.
Well, you know, that's probably all the time we have this week on the Devy special. We're going to be talking about that definitely more some this summer. Can't wait to share more rankings, more metrics, and really dive into some of these prospects with some profiles. And I am going to be talking about the adjusted production index and how that impacts Devy some, and some stuff over at RotoViz this summer. So really can't wait to just continue diving into that and really just trying to find new ways to analyze college and future NFL draft prospects here for and with you guys. Feel free. We love the questions this week. That really helped guide the discussion down the stretch on some names like Tyler Johnson and Brian Edwards and Tamorian Terry, Osmond. So we want to know what you guys care about because that's what we care about. But I can't wait to talk about more. But definitely just check out DynastyCommandCenter.com. Our premium Slack is just getting lit up right now. It's prime off-season talk. People are just already positioning themselves for success heading into the NFL season. And it's not even really to OTAs and training camp and anything like that just yet. But thanks again for joining us. And Curtis, thanks for taking some time. I know you got a lot going on. You're a busy guy. I try to stay busy myself. But you can find Curtis on Twitter at CPatrickNFL. I'm Travis May at FF_TravisM. And thanks again, all of you, for just joining us for another Dynasty Command Center podcast. And until next time, keep living that Dynasty life.
The news on flavored e-cigs talks a lot about the technology and teen use, but parents need to know more about the dangers of nicotine. So know this. 1. Nicotine is a toxic poison that can rewire teens' brains. 2. It can increase mood swings. 3. It can limit attention and learning. So even when it tastes like candy, nicotine is brain poison. Go to flavorshookkids.org for more.
The Gap Factory Labor Day sale is happening now. Hurry in for the best deals of the season. 40 to 75% off everything. Plus doorbusters August 30th through September 2nd only. Tees from $4.99. Logo styles from $16.99. And jeans from $19.99. Shop in-store today at Gap Factory or at GapFactory.com.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.